Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Now, it's one of the most hotly anticipated sports books of the year. It's all over the papers today, and we have the scoop here today. Champagne Football by Mark Tai and Paul Roan details the extraordinary rise and fall of FAI CEO John Delaney. And Mark Tai and Paul Roan join me now. Good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Brendan.
Hi, Paul. We'll start with the story that the Sunday Times, your paper, chose to lead with today. FAI paid $1 million to cover Delaney's personal bills. Just to give us an idea of the scope of what was going on here. So this was $1 million in personal expenditure. What was he spending it on?
Yeah, so this is something that was uncovered by COSI accountants that were brought in by Sport Ireland, the state body, last year. And the findings of the report were kept secret, but they were sent immediately to the guards. But we've done a bit of digging and been able to get the details into Champagne Football. So what they found is that huge legal fees were paid on John Delaney's behalf by the Football Association of Ireland, coming up to a region of €500,000.
But this was for personal cases he took.
Yeah, so for example, John Delaney took about half a dozen legal actions, defamation cases against media organisations following the Rio Olympic ticketing scandal involving his mentor, you could say, Pat Hickey, in the Olympic Council of Ireland. And the FAI footed the bill. John Delaney got a lot of settlements out of that in the region of €250,000. The money went to John Delaney. The FAI picked up the legal tab and never sought any reimbursement from John Delaney. Aside from those legal costs and a separate legal cost of €200,000, there was €125,000 on his FAI credit card, which the FAI, I believe, are personal expenses. Involved in that were €50,000 in cash transactions. So basically, you know, you take money out from the ATM. John Delaney was doing that hundreds of times and, you know, never declaring what the money was actually for. So the FAI and COSI said, well, that's personal expenditure. And I suppose, as well as these large legal costs and personal costs, the FAI have had to pay a €2.7 million revenue tax bill because tax wasn't paid at this.
Benefit in kind on all of that. Yeah, and there were also jewellers, hotels, limousines on overseas trips.
Yeah, so that's some of the detail in the credit card expenditure. There was huge money paid in rent on John Delaney's behalf. He rented a house.
So he
in the last few years he was renting a house from Grainne Shoiga and at a cost of €36,000 a year, even though his contract stipulated that he shouldn't have had any rent paid on his behalf after 2014.
Okay, but it was in his contract that he would get his rent paid for how long?
Up until the end of 2014. But what happened was the FAI continued to pay it in 2015 and 2016 to the tune of €36,000 a year. Well, it was €39,000 in 1 year. And what we reveal in the book, one amazing detail, I suppose there's a lot of bits where we had to stand back and go, what the hell? One of those moments was from the Mazars reports when we found that a separate investigation commissioned by the FAI, they found that Deloitte, who were the longtime auditors of the FAI, actually, you know, asked the question, what's this €36,000 going out for on rent? And when Eamon Breen, who was the finance director, passed on the query to John Delaney, he said, why are they even bothering to query something so small?
And Paul, he was being paid, obviously, his wages again on top of this, and they were fairly healthy as well.
Yeah, I mean, he did take a 10% pay cut at one stage when the FAI was really feeling the financial pinch. But yeah, he was on a salary of €360,000. Well, we didn't know for most of the time, you know, until really the whole scandal broke 18 months ago, was that he also had a kind of a secret deal, which even most of the board didn't know about, which would have given them additional payments of up to €3 million based on loyalty bonuses and his pension and everything else. So his salary was, you know, enormously higher, really, than that €360,000 figure, which we were all pretty appalled by in the first place. So there was these gross excesses happening all over the FAI. And yeah, as Mark says, even, you know, when it comes out in those bald facts and figures, you know, it really is shocking. When we've been covering the story for years, when you think that he was, you know, the figure of him, COSI producing a figure of you know, over €950,000 that the FAI had absorbed. It really is, you know, it's a very chilling moment, actually.
But Paul, with the 2-3 million bonus slash pension slash severance, whatever it was, that all came out to a lot of the board around the time of Gibraltar and the match out there, which was, it was kind of when the ball that you guys started rolling, if everything unraveled and a denouement happened, it was there in Gibraltar. Tell us about the extraordinary carry on that weekend and the making of the new contract for John Delaney.
Yeah, well, when the story broke in the Sunday Times on the 17th of March, the 100,000 payment by John Delaney to the FAI, there was really a kind of the query had been in for a couple of weeks from Mark already. It was put in on the 1st of March, and shortly after that, Delaney announced that he was seeking to just kind of step aside. Now, he didn't announce it; he told the board and nobody else. So there was all this stuff going on at the same time. It looks as though that was all manufactured as a way of Delaney kind of, you know, taking the heat off himself. He produced, he commissioned a report, the Jonathan Hall report, which he seemed to already know what it was going to conclude when he commissioned it. So what happened then was that when this was all sort of arranged with the board, he then had to tell principally the president, Donald Conway, who didn't even know about the secret deal that Delaney had struck with the treasurer and Michael Cody, the company secretary, one of his closest allies, a few years earlier, which were for all these additional payments that nobody knew anything about. So I think that was when people on the FAI board actually turned against Delaney. That was a decisive moment in Gibraltar when Conway was aghast to discover that there was all these additional secret payments to Delaney that nobody knew anything about, when already the FAI was deeply in crisis over what we already knew. So, yeah, and I think at that time it was a turning point in the whole affair.
Now, that golden handshake of 3 million was agreed with some people in the FAI and everything, and it kind of came to light around they were cobbling together a new contract for Delaney on hotel notepaper in a hotel in Gibraltar, Mark.
Yeah, the Rock Hotel was where the FAI delegation stayed in that weekend. It was actually Mick McCarthy's first competitive match on his second coming as Ireland boss. So there was a lot happening that week. So the previous week we'd had the failed injunction attempt, which is, you know, high drama, and, you know, thankfully we prevailed. We got a high court judge ruling in our favour. There was significant public interest in any kind of transaction between the FAI and John Delaney. And then fast forward 7 days later, or 6 days later, in the eve before the match, on the hotel headed notepaper in Donald Conway's handwriting, he set out the terms and conditions of this new position that had been manufactured for John Delaney of executive vice president, which had been created, it seemed, to, one, draw the heat away from him. He didn't think the pressure would continue to build after that. And two, it would keep him on the UEFA executive committee because he had to be a vice president.
Well, I presume because, and from their point of view, they would have also thought that it kept the talents of John Delaney available to them as well.
Yeah.
Like, we should say that you know, they a lot of people did believe that John Delaney had a lot to bring to the table, didn't they?
Well, like, there's no doubt that John Delaney was a consummate politician. And, you know, you could see he was only the second Irish person ever to make it onto this UEFA executive committee, which is a very powerful position. It's basically the where all the big decisions at in European football level, billions of euro are decided where they go. And John Delaney was there as Ireland's as an Irish representative. And even when the FAI came into the famous Oireachtas committee hearing and they were, you know, asked some very searching questions about, you know, what is this position? Why are you keeping John Delaney in this position? It was all about that connection he had there with Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president, and being on that committee where, you know, he pulled a lot of sway.
Yeah, you've got to also think about, you know, Delaney would have been very largely responsible for the 2020 Euros being held, at least some of the games in Dublin, which would have happened over the summer. Mm. In fact, it's going to happen next summer. But that would have been the result of Delaney using his UEFA contacts. You can't take that away from Delaney. And also, he had this. They were trying to get a joint bid together to host the World Cup in 2030 with Scotland and England and Northern Ireland and Wales. So there was a lot riding on keeping Delaney powerful in Europe, all right.
Paul, I suppose part of the reason that this story is so dramatic as well is because John Delaney was, in a way, a kind of a celebrity football executive. He liked the limelight. You remind us of that incident where he threw the tie to his fans as being a kind of a standout moment.
Yeah, I was certainly there. I think I was there for both those occasions. Yeah, certainly the one that stands out most memorably was in Moscow, when Ireland battled to a goalless draw against Russia, which helped very much them on the path towards the 2012 Euros, which was the first tournament that Ireland qualified in for quite some time. Yeah, he had developed this kind of populist streak. So he had already kind of nurtured the grassroots of Irish football. But then he wanted to have the love of the Irish supporters as well, the Green Army. And so he was buying drinks in pubs, you know, spending thousands of euros, either of his own money or FAI money. Probably the two are virtually indiscernible anyway at that time. And then he had developed a rather strange and crazy practice of, yeah, in Moscow, he ran across the pitch and took off the famous green tie, threw it into the fans, and they were cheering wildly. I think some of them couldn't quite believe their eyes that this was going on and wondering sort of where this sort of, you know, football administrator was going to in his own mind that he would do such a thing. But everybody sort of went along with it for the laugh at the time. And really, you know, it was all considered a bit of a, you know, a bit of a laugh and a joke, even by the politicians, you know, who for years kind of turned a blind eye to really what was going on in the FAI. And are quite happy to go and take the seats at the Aviva Stadium and be entertained, you know, in the Jack Charlton Lounge and elsewhere. So really, for a long time, it was only certain people in the media, not just myself and Mark, but others, who were sort of banging the drum about this, and largely we weren't being heard. So I think the politicians and the sports administrators have to take a good look at themselves over the way they behaved, including Leo Varadkar, who was sports minister for quite a few years, and really did nothing about this situation when it was under his watch.
Okay, but like we don't know exactly what Leo Varadkar did or didn't know either. So let's just be careful about who we condemn here. Yeah. Okay. There was another side to the celebrity thing that I think the FAI started to get increasingly uncomfortable with, Mark, was that his relationship with Emma English was played out very publicly, wasn't it?
It was, and I suppose you can see even the effect of her on John Delaney's style. You know, like on the front cover of the book, we have, you know, John Delaney with hair slicked back, you know, looking very much the power broker, the UEFA executive. On the back cover, we have him, you know, with the floppy hair hoisted on the shoulders of Irish fans of Slovakia when he'd bought them all beer for this infamous beer train. And, you know, she very much cleaned up his act and kind of was almost, as you know, a political advisor in how he schemed and made his way in European football. But as well, she became kind of a constant presence at you know, all sorts of events, whether it be a presentation in Sligo or around Abbottstown where the FAI HQ was. And a lot of those, the pictures that stick in people's minds are of them kissing, and that was a constant thing. You know, that they'd be very public with their love, and it made a lot of directors unsettled. And I know one of them said to me, you know, John turned into a teenager around her. You know, and this was a constant thing that she'd be up by his side, and everywhere he went, Emma would be there too.
And I suppose one thing that brought together that side of John Delaney and then the FAI side of it as well. And look, I think to say that the you know, his money and that of the FAI were indiscernible, it could be slightly unfair. But his 50th birthday party, which was partly paid for by the FAI.
Yeah. So even like talking back to the 950,000 of personal money that went to John Delaney repaid 220,000 into the FAI. So that's something extraordinary again that we discovered, you know, that he was trying to repay money back into the FAI. But, you know, what Cosi found was, hang on, you know, John Delaney told the board, I'm 100,000 euro in credit with the FAI. Cosi analysed the numbers and said, hang on, no, there's over 700,000 you've picked up extra from the FAI here. And yeah, one of the most ostentatious moments was this 50th birthday party in October 2017, when the great and good from UEFA flew in. They were thinking about hiring helicopters to fly them down to Mount Juliet, but there was a storm and that didn't work. But they came down, there was pyrotechnics, Franck, the wedding planner was hired. So the FAI paid in the region of 80,000 euro. There was a nice sculptor in the shape of a pistol. You know, it was a James Bond theme. Even the waiters were dressed up as James Bond baddies. Emma played a big role in that. She's an event planner, so, you know, event planners are going to, you know, put on a good show. But at the end of it, John Delaney repaid 50,000 of it, and, you know, the FAI picked up the tab of over 30,000 euro for what was a, you know, a 50th birthday party, a very ostentatious birthday party.
Paul, there's a kind of a, you almost suggest in one little line that there's a kind of a Shakespearean aspect to all this, maybe, and in the sense that John Delaney was, maybe his rise in the FAI was motivated in some way by what happened to his father, Joe Delaney. Just remind us of Joe Delaney.
Joe was a long time sort of member of the FAI board, going back to the 70s, 80s and 90s, really. He eventually had that position of honorary treasurer, which was one which John would also take on. So which had a lot of power over tickets and stuff. So really, Joe got into hot water really after the 1994 World Cup, when a lot of tickets that were allocated to the FAI ended up in the wrong hands, and there was a big investigation as to how touts were able to get so many tickets, and it really resulted in Joe Delaney leaving the association under a cloud. There's no other way of putting it, after the night of the long knives in 1996. So really Joe was a kind of a controversial figure, and John kind of rose from the ashes of that particular incident, and then himself began his journey up the sort of slippery slope of to the FAI, and he kind of always he always spoke very affectionately of his father and said that he felt his father had been hard done by, and some felt he was motivated by revenge for his father with certain people who he felt had stuck the knife into his father over that incident. So that was a kind of a strange kind of genesis to John Delaney's FAI career.
And John Delaney didn't speak to you for the book, but you did get a phone call with his father.
Yeah, well, there's a fair bit about his father in the book. So obviously we afforded him the opportunity of speaking to us. So I did ring him, but he made it clear that he didn't want to speak to us, and that really he kind of blamed the media for a lot of the bad press that the FAI and that the Delaneys had got. You know, I think he called us yellow pack press and some other fairly offensive terms. But you know, he probably genuinely feels that. I mean, I think the Delaneys feel they did a huge amount of good for Irish football.
It was Veronica Guerin in the Sunday Independent back in the 90s that did some amazing investigative work to expose what happened with the FAI ticketing scandal and Joe Delaney at that time. You know, I think that really coloured the both Delaney's view of the media, you know, down through the years, that the media were very much seen as the enemy. And that was something I think when me and Paul interviewed a lot of the staff and directors, it was a common theme that, you know, the media, even, you know, people like Tony Donoghue, the RT soccer correspondent, mm-hmm. you know, if he showed up at Abbottstown, it was like a red alert. Everyone, you know, get ready, be on the defensive, you know, because these guys are the bad guys. These guys are the enemies. And this is very much, I think, going right back to the Joe Delaney, Veronica Guerin stories and the expose.
Yeah, and if he felt in conflict with the press, though, in terms of the grassroots of Irish football, we should allow that John Delaney was a hugely popular figure, wasn't he? And he was great.
Yeah. You
mentioned that thing in the book about when he travelled around clubs around the country doling out grants and tickets and stuff.
Yeah.
And he'd be on the phone all the time.
Yeah, like one director.
Politicking.
One director said when John Delaney went to a club for a club visit, it was like Jesus visiting Jerusalem. You know, people would be breaking themselves or breaking over each other trying to get into for the selfies with John. You know, even if going back a good amount of time when Paddy Bonner was there as the technical director in the FAI, you know, an Irish football hero, it would, even a club visit with Paddy, you know, people would be going up to John because they knew John was the guy to get in with, because John was the guy that had access to tickets, to club grants. And, you know, he was brilliant at that. He really tended the grassroots. And like, he boasts about this, that he'd been on over 2,000 visits with various clubs around Ireland. But what was clearly the problem was that he had kept taking his eye off the ball in terms of the FAI's finances. You know, we spoke to Gary Owens, who's the incumbent chief executive in the FAI, and he said, you know, when I came in there, the procurement side of things was like a black hole. You know, and this is something that John Delaney, as a chartered accountant, you'd think he'd have proper processes in place, but clearly that wasn't the case.
Listen, we should just kind of let people know as well that there are great moments of dark comedy. And just before we finish up, tell us about the credit union ads.
Yeah, so we talk about procurement. On the other side, where the FA get their money is sponsorship. And one of the things, they did a deal with the credit union for Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, who were the Irish managers back in 2015. They would shoot an ad, but unfortunately it all went wrong. There was two different ads shot, had a huge amount of money up for grabs for the FAI, but Martin O'Neill said, no, I wasn't happy with those ads. And the FAI ended up having to pay all the money back to the credit union, and who resolved never to work with the FAI again.
Yeah, and like the way those ads are characterised. The image of Roy Keane trimming a bonsai tree in an ad is something I will never forget. All right, guys, listen, I have to go to our own ads. So thank you very much, Mark Tye and Paul Roan. And Champagne Football is published by Sandy Cove and will be in the shops on Thursday, the 17th of September. Thanks, guys, and sure. A break.
Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.